Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, it's another Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hi, Mark.
Continuing a discussion on titling assets and why this is so important in estate planning. We started this discussion last week, and you want to review a little bit of some of the basics here.
Yeah, titling assets. In other words, whose name is on the asset? Whose names are on the asset? Or oftentimes, who is the beneficiary? That can be also be a titling issue. It is so important because we can do a lot of good document work. We can create a great will. We can create a great trust. And if we do not integrate the assets into the estate plan, then the estate plan is going to be broken. It's not going to work as we anticipate. And of course, why else do you come and do an estate plan? Because you have a certain vision that is in your mind and you want to make sure that that vision is carried out should you become incapacitated or should you die. And if the assets are not properly blended, integrated into the plan, then we have a disconnect. And there is going to be a potential mess, and or assets are going to get to places that we didn't think they were going to get. So what happens if we haven't checked all the different life insurance policies at work? Unfortunately, there are plenty of ex-spouses on life insurance policies, whether we own them outright or whether they're from work. I've seen assets where, unfortunately, deceased children were still a part of the beneficiary alignment, yeah, or minor children. And so these things are difficult, and they make a transition after your death very difficult for the people that you leave behind. And so the big deal, or the one of the primary reasons people come to me to get assistance with estate planning, is they want to make sure that everything works smoothly should they pass away. They don't want to leave a mess behind. So, listener, is that where you're at? Then we need to do good estate planning. Unfortunately, many people kind of make up their own estate plan. They put kids on assets. That is typically not a good solution. There's tax consequences. There's liability issues that could happen with that. So good estate planning is always a far superior solution than making up how you think an estate plan should be. The cost that you put out into an estate plan is almost always far less than the mess that we have to clean up after somebody dies. If I don't have your signature ability because you've passed away, then it's very difficult. Time equals money when you're hiring an attorney. So it is far better to do a good estate plan now, have things cleaned up, know exactly what's going to happen to your assets, have that vision that God has put into your mind with how you want to take care of your family, and then have good documentation surrounding that vision and then getting those assets integrated into that vision. I talked about last week that unfortunately, there's a lot of documents out in the world doing estate planning, but the assets are not properly aligned. So there is a disconnect. Make sure that if you are going to sit down with an attorney, that they are going to detail your assets with you as a part of your estate planning process. If they are not, then find a different attorney. It is very important that every single one of your assets is reviewed and instructions are given with how you have to title it and or how the beneficiary must be aligned in order to make the estate plan work that you just put together. So make sure that your assets are always aligned and integrated with that plan that you take time, energy, and money to do. Can't have the disconnect. And that's really why this conversation is so important. If we don't get the assets right, then the plan cannot be right, and we want to make sure they're all moving in the same direction.
Okay, well, moving into the retirement assets, and they have to be held in your name only. How does
right.
that work?
Yeah, that's right. So if you have a 401k, you have an IRA, you have a Roth IRA, a 403b, any of these.
Even though someone might be on as a beneficiary on it.
Right, right. And so that's how we need to do the estate planning is that, number one, by tax law, those retirement, or in other words, they are tax-deferred accounts. Mm. So you have not paid taxes, or in the case of a Roth, you've right. paid taxes, but then the appreciation in the growth of the asset is not going to be taxed. So there is still a tax-deferred characteristic in that. All of these are must remain in your personal name. So I can't put them into a trust. We cannot put a joint spouse onto the asset. They must remain in the participant's name only. So therefore, we use beneficiary designations. And the beneficiary designation will then tell us, if you die, where does the asset go? So if it goes to a spouse, then they take it in their own name. If it goes to a trust, then it's going to be surrounded by the trust instructions. Now, maybe your trust instructions say, take care of my spouse first. So there is a similarity in leaving it to a spouse versus leaving it to a trust, although there's really not. With this, I want to tell you, be very, very, very careful in ever naming a trust a beneficiary of an IRA. Most trusts would receive an IRA and make it taxable. Mm-hmm. So now, my work does not. My trusts end up being, it's a technical term, it's called a qualified beneficiary. So there would not be an immediate tax in my system. However, most trusts that I have reviewed do not have proper language to make the trust a qualified beneficiary. Therefore, if you name the trust as a beneficiary of an IRA, there is a high likelihood that that is going to be taxed at your passing. Mm. And if your IRA is a bigger asset of yours, that could be devastating to your beneficiaries instead of them getting a deferred tax status in that inherited IRA. So it's a very technical aspect, but be very careful. Only leave an IRA beneficiary to a trust when your attorney tells you to do so. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, leave it to a spouse and other places, which is more traditional, because if your spouse receives it, then they can do a spousal rollover. They can put it into their own name at that time when you pass away. So be really careful. Get advice. Please get good legal advice when you are dealing with your IRA beneficiaries. Be careful of leaving minor children as beneficiaries. Last show, I mentioned that, the hassles and the hoops I had to jump through when someone came to the office off the streets and they had a 13-year-old inheriting a IRA. It is very difficult and it's very costly to get that 13-year-old those assets. And the court stayed involved until they were 18, and it's a big hassle. So when you are using a beneficiary designation on your IRAs, it may not be as simple as you think. It might be the right answer to leave it to your spouse, and it might not. How about in blended families? What do you do? If you have children and you leave everything to your spouse, then that spouse doesn't share with your children. These are tricky, difficult scenarios, and they need to be discussed with your estate planning attorney to make the right decision. So, unfortunately, a high majority, I don't know, I have no statistic, I'm just by my own experience, it is close to 100% of anyone that I have ever talked to just simply takes a financial advisor's advice on who to name as a beneficiary. I'm not saying don't trust your financial advisor. I'm saying that this is a big legal issue, and you need to make sure that you have an attorney's voice so that the beneficiary designation aligns with your estate plan. So again, that assumes you've done an estate plan. That's always step number one. So IRAs are very tricky. You need to get competent legal advice so that the IRAs are going to blend with your plan every single time. I don't want to take any chances that there's an errant tax, whether it's an estate tax, whether it is an income tax, or whether we have a minor beneficiary. Good estate planning is always your solution. So specifically with IRAs, we have to make those right decisions.
Okay, well, so how should someone hold assets if they use a will as opposed to a trust?
Yeah, so in wills, then we do need to look at every asset. So in a will environment, what we're doing is we're saying any asset that has to go through probate or that I intentionally leave to my will, then the will takes over when an asset comes to it. Most of the time, wills are going to be an instrument that direct assets that were titled in your name but did not have a beneficiary designation on it. So most bank accounts, people put some sort of a beneficiary on that. Transfer at death, beneficiary transfer. There's different terms that different banks use. So those would never hit the will because there is, by law, a contract with the bank that says, leave it to these people. Similarly, with investment accounts or the IRAs that we were just talking about, then those are going to oftentimes have a beneficiary designation. So again, a beneficiary designation is when you sign up with a contract for a financial institution to hold your assets, that is a contract, and they have terms of use. So when you name a beneficiary, that by law, by contract law, that institution is going to move the money according to how you named your beneficiaries. So it's an issue of law, contracts. So, but here's an asset that doesn't have a beneficiary on it. Your house. Now, is there a way to put a beneficiary on a house? Actually, the answer in Washington is now yes. As of 4, maybe 5 years ago, the answer was no. Every house, if it was in your name, had to go through a probate process. That is not the case anymore. So we have a transfer on death deed that is available now. Not many people use it. But what it is that you're just transferring. You're retitling a deed, and it says, when I die, leave the house legally to these people. So they have to take your death certificate and fill out an affidavit, give it to the county auditor, and say, here is proof that this person passed away, and I am on the house as a beneficiary. So it works similarly. There's a few administrative hoops that you got to jump through, but it's going to work very similarly as a beneficiary clause in any asset that we are used to. But not many people use that right now. And so
why is that?
Because they just don't know it exists. Oh, no. And so therefore they just take title to their home and I own my home and that's it. So again, when you do good estate planning, and you go asset by asset to make sure that every asset is integrated into the plan, wills should oftentimes use a beneficiary transfer on death deed that will help avoid the probate process in a will scenario.
Okay, looking at titling assets, how to manage that properly in estate planning. Taking a quick break here, but people are intrigued, Paul, by your services, and how do they find out more?
Well, head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to contact us at Planning with Purpose as well. So head over to legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Can I avoid probate? Will I lose everything if my health becomes compromised? How do I preserve what I have for me and my family? Will the government take it all? This is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. These are some of the most common questions we get on a daily basis, and there are solutions for all of these issues. It is time for you to protect your family and what God has placed under your stewardship, and we can help. Go to legacyandfaith.com to find out more about our services and upcoming educational opportunities. That's legacyandfaith.com.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, looking at titling assets properly in your estate planning, and you're talking about how that works with a will. You want to give us any other refresher courses about how a trust works with this?
Yeah, absolutely. So titling things into a trust is really how a trust works. So a trust is a holding container. It is intended to hold every asset so that if you ever became incapacitated, a successor trustee could come and take their position as the new trustee. And when they do that, when assets are properly titled in the name of your trust, in other words, for example, it's in the Paul Grant Trust instead of in Paul Grant's name, then that successor trustee will have legal authority over every asset that the trust owns when they are brought into power. And in addition, when you have an adjustment in your estate plan, so let's say you are leaving blank percent to your church, and you are leaving another percentage to missionaries, and the missionaries retired. So you wanted to change that the missionaries were going to receive a part of your assets. Well, in a trust, you can go back to the one document because it holds your assets and make that adjustment in one place. Well, unfortunately, when we have missionaries or churches or nonprofits in our will, because most assets we own are either jointly owned or they have a beneficiary designation, most assets never get to our will. So therefore, the charity or missionary would never get anything. Hmm. So you would have to go and actually add the church or add the missionary to the beneficiary designation clause in your different assets. So now you want to change because the missionary's retired in my example. Now you have to call every single institution that you have assets at and double check your beneficiaries and see if that missionary was ever put on as a transfer on death beneficiary. Instead of having a trust where you go to the document and you change it one time because that document, the trust, holds all of your assets. So now you have one place to make an adjustment that is going to change every single asset simultaneously instead of running asset to asset. And as a matter of fact, when a missionary retires and you go, okay, so they're not on the field, I'm not going to support them anymore, and I'm not going to redirect it. We often forget that they're a part of our estate plan. We often forget that they're on as a beneficiary of our IRA or any other place. So we need to make sure that estate planning, when it's done well, has every asset in mind. And that is the power, one of the powers of utilizing a trust, is you go and you make one change to one document and everything then falls in line because the trust owns all of your property. However, most trusts, or let me say it this way, clients, when they come to me, if they have a trust already, very, very few, almost none, have all of their assets in trust. So therefore, their plan is divided. They're going to use the trust instrument, and then they're using their transfer on death, and even sometimes they have assets in their own name. So that ends up being probate. So now they're using all three systems instead of just one system, which should be the trust. So when you have a trust, again, the whole purpose of this conversation is that when you do estate planning, not if you do it, when you do it, you need to do estate planning. That is the starting point. When you do estate planning, make sure that you find an attorney that is going to detail each and every asset to make sure it's going to work with the plan. And the attorney should be taking responsibility to do that work for you. If you get a list from the attorney and they say, go do this, that's not the right attorney. You want them to take responsibility to help you get every asset aligned and integrated into the plan that they created, whether it is a will or whether it is a trust. So when you have a trust, it is critical, again, that every asset is in the name of the trust. I don't care which plan you use. You have to go asset by asset. You have to make sure everything is integrated into that new plan. Yes, there are many advantages, tax advantages, changing during your lifetime advantages. If you become incapacitated, there are advantages to having your assets in a trust versus just using a financial power of attorney. All of those are beyond today's scope. However, titling is not. So you must have every asset moving towards the same goal as your estate plan. So it is important that even with trust, and specifically with trusts, that every asset gets retitled into the name of the trust so that you have the power as the trustee, the next trustee will have the power, and you can make adjustments through your lifetime in one place that affects all your assets simultaneously. Mm-hmm. Now, the beneficiary designation of IRAs, I already mentioned, only put a trust as a beneficiary of an IRA when you have your attorney telling you to do so. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, please don't do that. Get good legal advice when you're dealing with IRAs, mm-hmm. whether it's a will or whether it's a trust scenario. Make sure that you get legal advice on how that beneficiary is supposed to blend with your estate plan.
Okay, with titling assets, what if you own a business? What does a business owner have to do?
Yeah. Business owners, they're a special breed, aren't they? Mm-hmm. I'm one of them. So businesses are often our baby. It's sometimes we love them more than our own children. And so I get accused of it. So we spend probably more time in our business, more time working in our business than we've spent with our children, more time working in our business and on our business than we have with our spouse. And so it is a very, very important issue to make sure that your business is going to align with your estate plan. Mm. There are many unfortunate traps to business owners that with estate planning. So let me just in the last few minutes that we have kind of talk about some of the things that we need to think about for business owners. So number one, do you own your business through a legal entity? So many businesses are owned through an LLC and sometimes through an S corp, less often through a C corp. So the C corp is the bigger companies. Construction companies oftentimes run C corps. They actually own stock and things like that. So number one, in thinking through your business, who is going to take over your business if something happens to you tomorrow? Do you even have a plan? So when we start with business owners, the first step is, okay, let's talk about who knows your business well enough, who would run your business if you're no longer there. And most business owners do not have an answer to that question. So there is a disconnect for most business owners in the estate planning process because we're working so hard to build a business and we think that we have tomorrow available because my calendar says I've got appointments that we don't even think about the transition. Well, what if the unexpected transition was forced upon us? How much life insurance do you have? Is the business going to survive? Do you have the right people? Do you have right employees? Can your spouse do it? Do you have a partner? What would it look like if that partner died instead of you? If you died, is your partner in trouble because you have different talents and gifts usually? Does your partner want to be a partner with your spouse? Do you want to be a partner with your partner's spouse? And so all these different questions begin to roll around in business agreements. Most business owners do not have appropriate business agreements, not even in partnerships. Mm. So they've been doing it on a handshake. We've been getting along great, and they don't have anything written. So in business ownership, the Washington law will tell you how your business passes and who has rights unless you create a business agreement that clearly outlines how you are going to run that business, specifically when you have other partners. So really with businesses, yes, having the will, having the trust is extremely important, but it is as important that you have your business documents cleaned up and that your business is going to, again, blend with your estate plan and that you have buy-in and partnership agreement with what happens should somebody die. Oftentimes, there's one primary business partner and a secondary partner. Well, often, do you want the same rights given to each partner, or did the one who started the business, do they have more rights? So business owners, you need to do estate planning. And part of that estate planning is you need to have a really good business agreement. Even if you are in business on your own, you need a good business agreement. So business owners, you're a tricky bunch. And the bottom line is everybody needs to do estate planning. Talked about blended families, talked about business owners. They're always the ones with the most to lose if it's not done well. But we all have something to lose. And it usually is the family piece and the family transition at the back end. That's why most clients do estate planning. We want to make sure that it is a smooth transition, and having all of your assets integrated into that plan is the only way that the plan can transition smoothly.
Titling assets, so important in estate planning. If you want to find out more and work with Paul in any way, how do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Well, head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us, all found at legacyandfaith.com.
It's the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.